Welcome to this month's special guest interview.
This month, I'm very pleased to have Mr. Garrett Gunderson as my special expert guest. Garrett B. Gunderson is a natural-born entrepreneur who began his first licensed business at age 15. Garrett took state for entrepreneurship in high school and by age 18 was named the SBA Young Entrepreneur of the Year. Garrett first began focusing his abundant energy and talent on the financial services industry while attending Southern Utah University. He was honored multiple years as one of the top five male contributors and was the youngest person ever to be inducted into the Old Main Society for his philanthropy and service to the university. Garrett began making a six-figure income his first year out of college and was a millionaire by age 26. He is now the founder, partner, and executive of five successful companies. Garrett's passion for helping others break down barriers to become successful is most evident in the Freedom Fast Track, a unique process he authored and designed to help others recognize potential, which can then be transformed into production through value creation. Garrett is also the author of the highly acclaimed book, Killing Sacred Cows. He attributes his success in life to a hunger for learning and in finding the greatest teachers, learning from them, teaching others in turn, and thereby developing amazing relationships. Good morning and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update.
Hey, it's great to be with you. I'm excited for this interview today.
Garrett, you know, everybody wants to know a little bit about the people that we talk to and the experts that we interview. So maybe we could start out with a brief history about yourself, like where you were born and what your upbringing was like.
Okay, I'm from a small coal mining town in Utah, known as Price, Utah. If people think back to the Crandall Canyon mine disaster, that's just in the county, right over from the county I was born in and grew up in. And my grandparents and my dad all worked in the coal mines, so very blue-collar workers, great people, but I didn't inherit any money or get a large sum to get the start in life. When I was 15, I started my first business that was official with a business license and all that, which was not that innovative of a name, but Garrett Gunderson's Car Care. So I went out there and I detailed cars. My dad being a coal miner, I worked on a lot of the surface vehicles that were around the mine, and my mom worked at a credit union, and so I was detailing and cleaning the vehicles that were being repossessed there. And I, from word of mouth, I built a business and started to compete with that business and won $5,000 when I was 16 years old. Being a little bit of a nerd, I guess, I really wanted to invest that money. Most 16-year-olds probably want to spend it, but in my quest and search for finding a place for that money and looking to invest, took me till I was 18, till someone was really willing to talk to me. I began a career in the financial services industry while I went to college. So that began really with life insurance and selling that first, but I was a bit embarrassed to sell life insurance at a young age and thought, oh, I got to get into something like selling mutual funds. So I sold mutual funds for a while, and when the market in 2000 started to change, I went back to all my clients, which, let's face it, was family and friends and people that I really knew because I was pretty young and just starting out my business. I told them that they should get their money out or find another advisor until I could really figure out what was the best thing for them to do. And that's when I started to really discover some of these sacred cows and start to dispel them and learn them in my own life and apply them so that I could get to some of those things that you talked about in my bio as you introduced me.
Fantastic. Very interesting process. It's interesting to learn how people eventuate into their present state and what events happened. Now, in athletics, it's been said that champions are born, they're not made. But coaches will tell you that they can make champions out of people. And in your bio, it states that you're a natural-born entrepreneur. Do you think that you can teach somebody to be a great entrepreneur?
I do think that you could teach people to be a great entrepreneur if they want to be or they have a willingness to work with it, because my real belief is that we're all entrepreneurs. I mean, when it comes down to it, if you work at an organization and you have a boss, you're an entrepreneur to perform your duties and your tasks and what you're out to do and be productive, and your client is your boss. Or you could be, you know, more like the entrepreneur that most people think of, which is starting businesses or building businesses. But let's just face it, we all have to be productive, create more value than we consume, and therefore, we all have our own abilities and gifts, and as we utilize those, we're being entrepreneurial. So it could definitely be taught, and I've done it many times over, but too many people are just afraid and they think there's risk in it. But what's the risk in providing the most value that you can in the things that you're most passionate about? It really isn't as risky as people think. You just have to have a certain understanding of fundamental concepts and building a proper team, and anyone can do it.
Do you think people are being held back by outside forces or forces within themselves?
Well, it's always that they look outside of themselves rather than within themselves. So they look or they talk to people that are maybe well-intentioned friends and family. So these people that they love, or they look to the media, or they look to see what's possible based upon what's already been done. And because of that, and looking outside of themselves, especially in today's economy, they say, oh, well, the world economy is distraught. There's a problem. You can look at any newspaper, and it'll reinforce those beliefs. And so they feel powerless because of their environment or the economic environment. And so when you don't look within, you go without. But if people were to look within, they may have developed some negative thought processes, or they may have some doubts, but inside of us is something I believe that's the sole purpose. Our sole purpose is our greatest talents and abilities and strengths, and when we combine that for something that's really meaningful and that inspires us in our life, and we're willing to take action on that, that comes from within first. That doesn't mean that we're good at everything and that we could do anything at any time, but it does mean that if we look within, there are the answers there, and we do have capability if we're willing to just have a leap of faith and know that we are capable of things.
Now, that sole purpose was one of the terms that leaped off the pages in your book, Killing Sacred Cows, and I'm glad that you mentioned that. Now, we've heard that. We've heard masters talk about that. You can get it in the Bible, the teachings of Buddha,
sure,
in the Muslim religion, whatever. Even the Mormon religion will talk about sole purpose. So, And yet when you confront people and try and identify their sole purpose, and I've asked countless numbers of people, because this is relative to health and wellness and overcoming that struggle, what is your purpose? And they just look at me with a blank look on their face. Like, do you think that it's common for people not to have identified their sole purpose or not?
That is the majority of people. They haven't identified their sole purpose because they run a program that's called, I'm here to survive. If I can just survive. So it's not about cultivating passion. It's not about finding the most meaning and meaningful representation of their life that there is, or really determining what their purpose is, because they get confused and limited with the purpose of survival, which completely blinds people to their soul purpose. And so the majority of the population is not even aware that soul purpose exists, but those that are, many times they live in scarcity where there's too much fear, doubt, and worry, and that holds them back. And therefore, they go with the old myths of, I've just got to find the right job, I just got to work for 30 years, and then one day I can live in that dream of retirement. But it's not the dream most people say it is. And ultimately, people give up on their dreams to pursue lesser efforts.
And why is that? Why do they give up on their dreams? Do they lose sight of the dream? Do people rob their dreams? Do they get caught up in the world of materialism? Do they couple under stress and that their moral fiber rots away inside by compromising their life value?
All of the above, for sure. All of the above. You know, when we're kids, a lot of times in one day, we've been an astronaut, we've been a cowboy, we've adventured unknown territory, we're ready to create any next possibility with our imagination. But as time goes on and we listen to people tell stories of failure or tell stories where things didn't work out or suffering, or we hear stories back from the Great Depression, it starts to build this kind of social agreement that people adopt that it's risky to follow your dream. And if you follow your dream, you might fail. And it's better just to kind of live safely and survive rather than have the pain of not getting what you want. So interestingly, either way, adopting that mentality, you don't get what you want. So you're not going to have that. And even if you felt you didn't get what you want, so worst case scenario, you're no better off. Best case scenario, though, if you pursue your dream, is you actually might achieve it. And the thing is, those that are most successful fail all the time. I mean, they have small failures is the difference. They embrace it, they use it as lessons, and then they use it as ingredients to make a different choice the next day. So we shouldn't be afraid of that, and we shouldn't let that deter us. Because the most risk we could take is not pursuing our sole purpose. The least risk we could take is getting clear about what our best strengths are and how we can go out into the world and deliver something of value. So those people that are going to get hurt by a recession are going to be those that have been playing it safe, and they're not clear about what they can do and who they are. They've been following the old rules that are absolutely setting them up for failure. Those that are going to be able to pursue and actually prosper, which I believe will be about a third of the population, what's going to happen with them is they're going to embrace this as opportunity. They're going to recognize that there's plenty of pain out there, and they're going to say, here's the ingredients I have to solve that. Here's how I can go out and serve. And their conversations are not going to be about what's wrong unless there's a solution behind it. Others are just going to complain about what's wrong and continue to live this sheltered, fearful life. That's a life of scarcity. It's not fun, and it doesn't embrace full purpose. A life of abundance says, look, there are plenty of opportunities, and you have human ingenuity. You have ideas. You have relationships. What can you do today to take a positive step, to take an action in the right direction?
Unbelievable. Now, you mentioned the word scarcity. Please define what that means.
Scarcity is a fundamental belief system that there is not enough, that we live in a world of lack. And the way that it shows up is by fear, doubt, and worry. So scarcity is a mental virus and a programming that is a false belief.
Now, okay, we're in a mess right now because we're in Tucson. We're aware of what's going on in the States, you know, with these huge financial bailouts and, you know, the car companies and the Wall Street and the gas going up and down and with the talk in the media about people losing jobs, and it's never been as bad since the Great Depression. Now, if the world is abundant and we have so much abundance, you know, I remember once someone telling me that more fruit drops in the Amazon jungle and rots on the ground, and all of that could feed the entire population. If the world is truly abundant, which I believe it is, and I agree with you, then why are we in this mess in America, which is the strongest economic country in the world?
Because there's a counterfeit to abundance, and that counterfeit is ignorance. And in America, people were living in ignorance, meaning they were consuming more than they produced. They felt entitled to it. And therefore, once it was exposed, because credit started to dry up, because there was a whole push of, you know, I don't know, it wasn't money that was deserved. It wasn't money that was earned. And so people felt like, oh, I'm an investor. I just had a bunch of equity and a bunch of appreciation. That's not investing. And then they bought so many things with that eventually people couldn't afford anything as far as housing without being fraudulent with the loans. And so there was so much fraud amok, and then there were so many people on that bandwagon that once it was exposed, it just meant that we adopted a new reality. Now, there's still plenty of abundance because there's actually more opportunities now than there was before. There are more problems to solve. There's more pain and suffering in America than there was just a few years ago. But the thing that's abundant is our ideas. There's still people, there's still the same resources that were on the earth. We just had a faulty premise or faulty philosophy. Once that's exposed, it may feel like there's a temporary scarcity. But in reality, it's just showing that we weren't in alignment with principles. If we can realign with principles, we'll recognize abundance again, and it won't feel like we're so scarce. I mean, isn't it interesting that we're not off of growth that much? It's only like 4%, but people exaggerate it and feel like it's 100%. It's not as devastating as people think. The Great Depression, the original Great Depression, only a third of the people and a third of the population in the worst time in the country's history actually suffered or lost a job. But that's all that we hear about. That's all that's talked about. A third actually maintained. They continued the same standard of living, even if it was a little bit harder to maintain. But there was actually a third that prospered, and it was a time where more millionaires were made than ever before because there was unprecedented opportunity, and our ideas are abundant. Our abilities are abundant. There's an ongoing ability to serve and to have things grow and continued wealth. I mean, if we're saying that this is that bad, imagine what it was like 100 years ago and what they didn't have that we have as a normal standard of living and almost as free because we're born. I don't see it nearly as bad as the picture's painted, although there are hundreds of billions of dollars and trillions of dollars that were misappropriated. But this is an awareness where we can say, okay, what can I learn from that? And what can I do about that? Those are the two powerful questions.
That's fantastic. Some great, great, powerful points, Garrett. Thank you. Getting back to soul purpose now and thinking, I was kind of raised that money and heat were kind of the same thing. And it was this analogy that I learned when I was fairly young, that in order to build a fire, you got to go outside and chop the wood. You can't generate the heat to warm your log cabin until you work and get the wood. So you go outside, you chop, you physically chop, you drag the wood in, you light it up, and then you get the heat. So would you agree that too many people are looking for the heat for nothing without work or some kind of internet scheme or pyramid scheme or multi-level marketing scheme? What do you think about hard work versus smart work and work itself?
I love your analogy. I think it's fantastic. So many people want more money, but what they don't recognize is money is kind of like the heat. It's a byproduct. It's a byproduct of value creation. So how can people go out there and create more value rather than just look for more money? When they focus solely on the money, a lot of times deception, theft, coercion, feeling entitled, all those types of things come about. And yeah, I think that smart work is key because I can work really hard at digging a hole, but did anyone want me to dig the hole? Was there equipment that could dig it more efficiently and more effectively? And so smart work is absolutely necessary. And I think work in general, isn't it nice that people are actually having to work again? I mean, before people thought, well, I'm an investor, I'm buying properties. They sat around all day. They didn't actually bring the real value to the world. Now they're actually being asked and they're being almost kind of not forced, but it's just a new awakening and a new reality that they're going to have to go out and do something for someone. I think that's great news. There's plenty of great things that are coming about due to this recession. Families having to get, spend a little bit more time together. That's starting to happen. Have real conversations again. Not as much pride because people have been knocked down a little bit. And now with that new reality and awareness, they're actually going out and saying, well, what can I do? How can I do things better? How can I be more efficient? How can I think more intelligently about this value proposition that's out there? And yeah, we start to work smarter. I'll tell you, I was guilty of it. We weren't always working smart. We had so much money sometimes, like, oh, yeah, I'll hire this thing or this person. And oh, I don't think we're overstaffed, but there are many times that we were, and we were creating some of that own entitlement. And now it was kind of a check where we went and looked and said, well, what are we really doing? Is this a good decision? And it's brought about good consultants in our life and new knowledge that we wouldn't have had otherwise. And it got rid of some of the pride that was growing based upon a false economy. So I'm not unscathed. I've got some scrapes and scratches and made some mistakes and had some failures, but I feel so much more prepared moving forward, and I see so much more opportunity to help people out.
Let's talk about money now, Garrett. I would like you to define what you think it is, and keeping this in mind that I love Star Trek, and in that future, there's no money because it's not required, because they finally come to terms with the fact that we live in a world of abundance, and if all the money was evenly distributed right now on the planet, they say that every man, woman, and child would be probably a billionaire now. And therefore, we wouldn't need money because if we all had $1 billion in the bank, we wouldn't really require it to spend. So do you think that if we eliminated money, we would eliminate crime and the capitalistic nature that creates deceit and competition and even death and crime and all of it? Or like, what does money mean to you on this planet right now?
Well, I think that there's currency and that there's money, and those are two different things. So, for example, currency is the actual, if we're using a dollar as an example, that's a form of currency. But money is just any means of exchange. So, for example, when I go home and my son runs up, gives me a hug, gives me a kiss, that's money. We didn't have to have any exchange of currency to have that happen. We both had a feeling of meaningful worth and meaningful value that increased or appreciated our well-being in that moment. And that's money. Now, currency, on the other hand, I think currency can be useful. There's just so much confusion around it. So people are out there wanting more currency, but not necessarily asking how they can create more value or what it would take for them to have more currency. They're just wanting more, and they're hoping that they win the lottery or that someone hands it to them, and that corrupts and poisons their mind. Because if you're sitting down wanting more money, not thinking how you're actually going to earn it, then that's a sad day. That's a difficult time. Without money, though, without currency, it would be hard to exchange. We'd have to barter, and it allows us to exchange with people that we've never met before. And I agree that capitalism has massive limits, and especially when it's competitive to the standpoint that one's trying to win at the loss of another. I believe in a totally different model of cooperation, and as I call it in my book, coopetition, where we're compelled to go out and create value. So in that exchange, we may exchange dollars or some form of currency, because if I know you really well, we can have an exchange that doesn't require any currency. But if I don't know you and I produce a book, you can give currency for the exchange of that book. Now, we might end up wealthier because of that. You read the book, it increases your knowledge, you make different decisions and choices and have more prosperity in your life, and you gave me money, and now I have more resources to either, you know, make more books or content or material or go out and enjoy my life. And so I think it's a useful tool if properly understood. The education around money absolutely has to be increased so that people are not focused solely on the money and then using people, but instead people are masters over the money and they're actually loving people. So we use money and love people rather than love money and use people. And that's just a different focus. Money is just a neutral tool that we give it its power. So it's a form of energy, and as we increase our energy and we increase the energy that we give, we open up a possibility for more of that currency to come to us, or more money in the feeling of service or someone else that we develop a relationship with. So if we took all that money in the world and redistributed it, I think what would actually happen is that in a short period of time, the money would be back in pretty similar hands, because we would see the people that would have hurried and consumed it because they didn't know how to be a steward and properly utilize it. And we see other people that would use that money to create more wealth and impact the world more. And then we would still see those people that would be deceitful and hoard it and try and, you know, hold on to it, which I think is that scarcity mentality that some people, you know, that kind of gives it a bad name, as they're trying to accumulate as much as possible and hold on to it. For what? Why? I mean, to me, it's just something that we utilize, not something to hold on to and store as net worth, because that doesn't necessarily do any good. I think of the best example being Mother Teresa. I mean, she had a lot of money that people were willing to give her, and even money that she won, and even cars that were given to her, and she hurried and sold them and put them right back into their cause. See, it didn't corrupt her. Other people, like if we think of Ebenezer Scrooge and the fictional character there, you know, looking to hoard that money, it absolutely corrupted and poisoned him until he had a shift. And so finances is one aspect of wealth, but not the only aspect. As you know and as you teach, health is absolutely part of our wealth. And I would give up all the money in the world for proper health. And a lot of people end up having to do that because they don't take care of their health. But we'll talk more about what it means to be truly wealthy, and that it comes in five tracks as we go along the interview.
Yeah, that's fantastic. This is such great stuff. You know, you're saying so much stuff, it's just pouring into my heart, coming out through my mind and my eye. A couple things came to mind. They say you should never do business with friends, but in your model, you should be able to, if I hear what you're saying correctly, because the way that you do the business would be in a friendly, benevolent way. I have a term I use. It's called doing business with benevolence, where the objective is not to hurt, destroy, corrupt, simply supply a wonderful service or a gift that you have with someone in exchange for something that you need, and everything's hunky-dory. And I actually test a friendship by doing business with my friend, because you know how crazy people go when money's on the line?
Right.
So they say that you shouldn't do business with a friend, because what happens is that if you do, your friend will maybe be discovered that they're not your friend, because the bottom line is that they will betray your friendship for money, and a true friend wouldn't do that. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. I do business with friends because if they're a true friend, then you don't have to, you know, money's not going to come between you. If they're not, then they weren't a true friend in the first place, and it just exposed it quicker. So, I hire friends that work at my organization, even family. My mom does a lot of the accounting for some of the companies that I own, and I have a whole level of trust with her that helps and makes that more effective, and she cares. So, you know, I don't think this advice of don't do business with friends and family, here's what I would recommend, though, is charge your friends and family the same thing you charge everyone else. Because if people don't take it with the same level of seriousness, for example, their health, you know, they want it for free. Well, free to, you know, having it for free, a lot of people don't value free as much as if they put money into it. I noticed that if someone puts money in addition to the attention towards something, the reality of it coming forward and happening greatly increases. So I would say do business with friends, but make sure you get to the core, and, you know, and if you have a hard time working with them on a private matter, like you're taking them on as a client, maybe they work with your organization rather than you. Sometimes I find myself, Corey, kind of messing around and not being as serious or taking care of things with my friends, and then other friends I don't have that problem with. So my firm would still work with those people, but I just determine, you know, am I going to be able to really create enough value for them? But, hey, I'll work with friends all day long in my organizations if they're of the right mentality.
Yeah, that's great advice. That really, really is. And that solves a mystery for a lot of people, I think. Now, getting back to the little boy who's dreaming about being an astronaut or a fireman, I'm thinking back myself. I never associated that vision with money. It was pleasure and satisfaction and travel and adventure. There was no money in my mind at 6 and at 10 years old. So nowadays, everyone, you know, I've employed people in different businesses, and the first thing they ask is, how much do I get before they even find out what they're to do? When you're determining your sole purpose and you focus on what it really is in your life that you're designed by nature and God or evolution to do, do you think you should attach a monetary symbol to that or be free of that initially?
I think you got to be free of that initially. Otherwise, it'll corrupt you, and it'll, you know, if people follow the money first and then look for what they're passionate about or what their real calling is, they're going to be limited. And so here's the thing, in people living and expressing their sole purpose, there is going to be an equal amount of currency or money distributed. Some people are going to have more money than others, but we got to stop comparing ourselves to others. And if you're doing something that's absolutely fulfilling to you, that there are people out there that value it, and that it's a good expression of your life's purpose, then ask what's really important in your life. I mean, is it the material things? If people focus so much on the quantity of stuff, it's a recipe for failure, and they're doomed to live in poverty because there's always going to be someone that has more than you. I mean, I've had the nice stuff. I've had a Bentley before, and I don't now. It's just, it wasn't important enough to me. And at the time, I just didn't see that. I thought, oh, well, this is going to position me well, and people are going to think great of me, or whatever it might be. Those were the wrong reasons. Someone might have a true passion for cars, and great, they might own that, but not for me. I'd rather invest that money into my business and into the book Killing Sacred Cows to get the word out there so I could improve and create new relationships and have a greater impact on people. And so we're given these choices. And I would say, when you know what it is that you love and what you want to do, if you immediately say, second, I don't know if there's enough money in it, you are absolutely limiting yourself. And there was a study that I had in the book by Shroy Blotnick, and he took these people, 1,500 people, and over 20 years, he kind of tracked them, and they all wanted to be millionaires. Well, like 81 of them ended up being millionaires, or 83, and only two of them became millionaires because they chased money. The other ones became millionaires because they chased what they loved, and they focused on that. They didn't get too caught up in trying to invest in the stock market either. They just invested in their own expertise and what they wanted to do. And so there's a myth out there that you can't find what you love and make a living. That's absolutely not the case. I've done that. And I got to tell you, I did it under the circumstance of making a substantial high six-figure income before I found my passion, and having to kind of walk away from that, which was very certain, and I had a system to do it. So I had a cost that way. Some people have it the opposite, but it's been absolutely worth it to me. And it did come at times of very limited amount of financial resources because I made the transition and because I was, you know, kind of going out on a limb to what other people would look at. But I just knew that leap of faith was I was doing what I was born to do, what I was meant to do, and how could that fail? Even if that meant I made some mistakes, I learned some lessons along the way, I have the passion and the drive to keep moving forward. We cannot ignore that calling. When we align with our God-given talents and abilities, that is so rich and that is so enriching that I don't see how you could ignore that just to try and earn a buck.
No doubt, no doubt. Now, I want to tell you that I really enjoyed reading Killing Sacred Cows, and I want to talk about that. But, you know, talk about destiny or good fortune or the divine law of karma, recycling, whatever you want to call it. You know, I met a couple of guys, Jason and Chris, who know you in Salt Lake City, you know, at a seminar, and we were putting some business concepts together. And they actually mailed me your book, and they said, you know, we know this guy, Garrett, and we think you should read this book. It's just a great piece of literature. And I always read everything that anyone ever gives me in those kinds of situations, because it's almost like it was meant to be. But anyway, I couldn't put it down. I just devoured it. I read it through a couple of times. And I really want to congratulate you on putting together something that is monumental for helping me and others who read it to understand some of these principles that you've made evident. And one of them was human life value. That was another one that leaped off the page. We've talked about your sole purpose and scarcity, but what do you mean by human life value?
Well, the only thing of real value in this world is human beings. Properties aren't valuable. Computers aren't valuable. Cars aren't valuable if you take human beings away from them. Those are just tools. They're just property value. Property value is the tangible things that we could touch and that we feel and that we might utilize. It could be anything from a table to a deck that I'm standing on right now. And those are all great, but they're just property value. Human life value is our ideas. It's our experience as a human being. It's our mind. It's our thoughts. It's our capability to be ingenious and utilize, you know, those thoughts to bring forth and help other people. So human life value is the unseen that brings forth everything that we sell and make it seen, or at least organizes it. So what is your human life value? Well, it's your sole purpose is the best expression of your human life value, but your sole purpose is part of your spirit, where human life value is, you know, part of your mind, and then what you do to go out there and take those thoughts into the world. So it's our value as human beings.
Now, first of all, how did you come up with the title, Killing Sacred Cows, and what inspired you to write the book?
The title was so hard to finally come up with the title. We were working on the book and working on the book, and I was sitting there with my co-author. He was a ghostwriter at the time. He did such a phenomenal job, I made him a co-author. And we were just, you know, outlining and working on the chapters, and I said, "You ready to kill some sacred cows today?" And he said, "There's the title of the book." And I said, "You know, that would be a great title." And I called one of my spiritual guides and mentors, and I said, "What do you think of Killing Sacred Cows?" He says, "I think it's a harsh title. You shouldn't go with it." And I'm like, "All right, let me think about it." And I call him back later that day. He's like, "No, I thought about it. I know that it's kind of a in-your-face, harsh title, but that's what you want to do, is grab people's attention. I mean, the message is uplifting in the book and you know, very inspiring for so many people. We're killing, that's such a harsh word. But to grab people's attention and recognize that sacred cows are these unquestioned popular beliefs that are fed to us from a lot of times scarcity or from the media or, you know, past experience that absolutely hold us back and limit us. And so if we're willing to question those and willing to look at it, we can get to prosperity. We can get to who we really are. And so I want to help people get beyond those. And so Killing Sacred Cows, I thought, was kind of a catchy title that really described what we were doing inside of the book.
You know, we've run out of time. I got time for a couple more questions. I just can't believe, you know, when you're in the moment, in the now, and you're living life with passion, you become unaware of time, as opposed to, I saw a guy I met the other day traveling, and he was looking at his watch constantly and hoping that his day would pass by quickly, and it reminded me of me being in that same situation when I was much younger, working in a mill or a plastics factory or whatever, and just waiting for that bell to ring. I couldn't wait to get out, as opposed to now living my passion and feeling free and independent. But tell us what Freedom Fast Track is all about, Garrett, please.
Freedom Fast Track is about discovering true wealth, which is financial, but it's also our sole purpose. It's our mindset and our mentality. It's our physical well-being, so our health and our nutrition. And then it's ultimately the quality and richness of our social life, which has to do with our relationships. So financial, soul purpose, mental, physical, and social. And having people get clear about what it is that they want and being intentional about living that life, where they can be responsible for their own prosperity and therefore be free to live an extraordinary life. So the fast track brings about the education to make that possible, but it also brings about systems and tools to reinforce it and to make it more efficient and easier for people to implement. Then having mentoring so it can be personalized and customized and get people beyond the limitations of scarcity or where they may be stuck in their own mind. And then ultimately the accountability to see it through. That's what the fast track is. So that people have freedom based upon how they define it and what they really want so they can live this life that they love.
So the website is www.freedomfasttrack.com?
It is freedomfasttrack.com. Probably the best place to go, though, is killingsacredcows.com. Learn more about the book. You can sign up for a free newsletter. And even I have a website that talks about my personal philosophy and everything with GarrettBGunderson.com because we're just revamping Freedom Fast Track right now temporarily.
Okay, good. Well, I'll put those website links on your bio on our site in our members area where our students and grads and members will be able to access this interview and listen to it many, many times in MP3 format. A lot of them download it to their listening devices and stream it on the computers. But it's been a remarkable interview, Garrett. I know you've got seminars, books, your services. They'll find that information there. And you're truly an authentic individual, very charismatic. I've seen your CD also. I viewed it. Tracy and I, my wife, really enjoyed it. It's in the book. For all of you out there who haven't read this book, please get the book, order the book, pass the book around. It'll change lives. It'll uplift. It'll elevate. It'll edify. I know the time has come for this kind of thinking, and it's the perfect time right now. Thank you so much for a brilliant interview, and if you wouldn't mind leaving us with a final comment.
Okay. I'm going to leave you with an offer and a comment. Anyone that goes to killingsacredcows.com and orders a book and just puts in one of the boxes or the information, Corey Holly, if you put that in there, we're going to give you a free guide to help discover and find your soul purpose. That was the power and the core content of what we're talking about here. So when do you feel most creative? When do you feel happiest? What things are your greatest strengths? And having a specific structure so that you can go out there and live that. Plus, we'll give you a free month of a Power Hour, producer Power Hour program that helps you invest in yourself on a daily basis as a gift because you're someone that associates and is around Corey Holly. And I just enjoyed the interview. So killingsacredcows.com, you put that in there. We're going to give you some additional bonuses because, look, I know that all the problems that we're facing in the world, we've got the solutions within the people that already exist. I just want to help people get those solutions out of them and, not let scarcity conquer.
Right on. Garrett B. Gunderson is an entrepreneur, a truly remarkable man with a great message and a lot of personal power that he can share with us. And thank you so much for bringing to mind the importance of soul purpose and human life value, and that it is possible to soar like the eagles. Garrett, we thank you very much.
Thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed the topics discussed and our special guest interview on this edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU is produced monthly and is distributed internationally by the Corey Holly Institute. To learn how you can subscribe to this unique and motivational audio program, please visit CoreyHolly.com or call us toll-free in the U.S. and Canada at 1-866-433-1595. That's 1-866-433-1595. This is Scott Barrett, wishing you the very best of health and fitness for life.
Representing lifestyle, new way of life. Listen. It's SNU, sing along, it's true. Yo, coming through straight, Malik with sports nutrition update. Prolong your life, live long, stay strong, for it won't be long till your time is gone. So I sing this song to pass on wisdom. Hit us up at CoreyHolly.com. Love your life, live right, things will be alright. Knowledge is key, just follow our lead. You'll see ya changing heart and health, which leads to wealth and higher self-esteem. Follow your dreams and see. Follow your dreams and see.